Part 3, Chapter 9, The Faculty of Prophecy. From the foregoing, one can grasp a totally new meaning of the concept servant of the word, or more correctly, this concept regains its original significance. A servant in this sense is not one who holds a mystical office, or who, in one spiritual school or another, fulfills a task. He is not one who prepares himself intellectually, mystically, or expertly for practical work in the service of mankind, or execute it. No, a servant, in the sense spoken of, is one who, having been linked to the electromagnetic field of radiation of the Brotherhood of Christ, is in due process admitted to the great microcosmic transformation, who then experiences a variety of effects and spontaneously demonstrates these characteristics as a matter of course. Therefore, only when we have been connected to the field of radiation of the Universal Brotherhood and experience the effects thereof in our system, can we speak of true servantship in the biblical sense. Then, a variety of services develops an increasing number of characteristics in practical service to world and mankind. The well-known chapters of Corinthians 12, 13 and 14 have been falsified. People take them to mean that one person receives the gift of healing, a second the gift of teaching, a third might be called an apostle, and a fourth a prophet. The nine characteristics listed by Paul are, as it were, torn asunder to prevent them from being powerful. The Gnostic meaning, however, is that they reveal themselves successively in a continuous sequence in the candidate until, at a given moment, they radiate from him in their totality. It is, of course, unimportant where you are in the sphere of dialectics, socially, economically, or whatever. Whether you are Valentine Andrea the theologian or Jacob Boehme the shoemaker. The first gift of service is the power to ignite faith in the person suited. The permanent atom in the servant hereby directly assimilates the light power of the gnosis and, through radiation, awakens an activity in the permanent atom of the seeker more or less as a mirror reflects the sunlight. This sunlight is then clearly perceptible even in the darkest corners. This is how the first faculty works. A servant, via his direct connection to the gnosis, reflects the Gnostic radiation and is able to ignite a light in the darkness of a person's heart if there is a permanent atom present in that person's heart. The second gift of service refers to the power of image projection. A seeker can experience the light. The spiritual light can be reflected in his dark soul. What kind of light is this? Where does it come from? The second gift enables the worker to help here, namely, via the power of imagery, which he possesses. With its assistance, the teacher seizes an image from reality and projects it onto the consciousness of a pupil possessing faith. Numerous questions thereupon arise in the pupil. Why is this so, and why is that so, and how should I contend with this or that? If there was no link of faith between teacher and pupil, the image projection, the second gift, would miss its goal and the pupil would make all kinds of faulty, speculative conclusions. There is therefore a third gift consisting of the power of imparting the intellectual analysis of the projected image to the consciousness of the pupil, as a result of which the pupil begins to understand and comprehend. The fourth gift is the faculty of the mastery of powers. This refers to the will. It makes its possessor a magician, not via occult development, but by God's grace. An occult power always develops from a power of nature, whereas this power is the result of a progressive touch by the Holy Spirit. Out of the synthesis of these four faculties, a fifth gift reveals itself in the pupil, namely the gift of healing. This gift alone invests the servant with the age-old royal priestly office. Man is ill, very ill, and his healing consists of making him whole or holy. That is why healing means bringing man back to his original home. The gift of the fifth faculty allows the gnosis itself to enter the microcosmic system of the pupil. Until now, the light was projected into the pupil by the teacher, but now the pupil must be directly linked with this light himself. The teacher, the servant of the fifth power, sets this process of first-hand connection in motion by means of ignition. Via this flame, the person concerned is connected with the Gnosis directly. This fifth gift of service is again connected with the sixth faculty, namely, the faculty of distinguishing spirits. There are laws of distinction which the magic servant knows and must handle. He may not overstep them, and with their assistance he can prevent his gifts being used wrongly or uselessly. A new possibility can only develop when the pupil is ready. If he is not yet that far, then he must wait, for he cannot force such a process. Waste of energy, therefore, does not occur in the bona fide spiritual school, since this sixth power is employed. Let us now turn our attention to the faculties of tongues and of prophecy. We have already attempted to explain philosophically to you that in prophecy, as understood by the universal doctrine, speculation, mediumship, and the results of occult science or of fantasy are totally ruled out as the prophet speaks or bears witness from the reality observed by him, namely, the reality of the new field of life. One cannot call every seer who speaks about this field of life from first hand a prophet. Imagine that you can observe somebody from this new field of life in a first hand binding and tell us about him. Then you are a seer, but still not a prophet. Only he is a prophet who, standing in the interplay of the two natures, and thus also being linked to the new field of life, glimpsing the latter in actual moments, and testifying to it out of love for the Gnosis and mankind, sounds the warning, the time has come, and who urges his listeners and supporters to self-liberating activity. That is a prophet. We stated that John the Baptist was such a prophet. The hymn of Zechariah says of him, "And you will be called the prophet of the Most High, for you will go before the Lord to prepare his ways, to make straight his ways." Now you will say, this may all be right, but how can we distinguish true prophecy from false? There are so many prophets in this world. They give evidence so persuasively from so many different spheres of influence, and they exert themselves so much that one almost has to believe them. So it is very difficult to reach the right conclusion. How can one know when a prophet reveals himself to us whether we must accept or reject his pronouncements? What are the standards for evaluation?
To these questions, we must respond that one will always recognize the true prophet through the fact that his prophetic faculty rests on the six faculties already discussed. It is out of the question in the bona fide spiritual school that someone is a prophet only, exclusively giving evidence and speaking from the new field of life. No, when a real prophet raises his voice, he is carried by the totality of powers of the six faculties previously mentioned. Of what use would prophecy be if those for whom the prophecy is intended were not granted the opportunity to follow the path the prophet points out? Another question might be, if the prophetic gift must be viewed in connection with the six previously mentioned, does it have any practical use? One could say that so many great possibilities are already contained in the six previous gifts, and that through them so many links have already been established between pupil and brotherhood, that what practical use can prophecy then have? It is wonderful to hear of all these splendid aspects and the bliss of the new field of life, but is there an element of real practical value in this? Is not the pupil, thanks to the effects of the other gifts, already directed towards the new field of life and engaged in approaching it? If these questions crop up, then take note of the purpose of prophecy and the mission of the prophet. The goal of prophecy is to announce a new chapter in the genesis of things or a certain aspect thereof. But beyond this, and we emphasize the point, the faculty of prophecy in conjunction with the fifth faculty simultaneously has an igniting, dynamic, vivifying, magic quality. what the faculty of imagery and the faculty of explanation have projected and expounded is set in motion by the seventh power, the power of prophecy. Prophets, therefore, are the catalysts of the operation of the gnosis in time. Thus, they do not merely testify, I have seen this of that, and leave it at that, but rather when they prophesy, they simultaneously bring about an ignition, a dynamizing of the process they proclaim. One could compare this with the lighting of an already laid fuse. The fuse is there, and now there must be a flame which ignites the fuse so that an explosion results. Another example, there is a stream of water, but this stream is held up by an obstacle or a barrier. Now the prophet declares, the new water is here, and there is enough for everyone. And then he swings his axe at the barrier, chops and breaks away the obstacle, so that the stream can flow freely. Thus the prophet does not just say, the time has come, now it is going to happen, but at the same time makes sure, while taking into account all intentions and directions of the Brotherhood, that it actually happens. Thus prophets are builders, masons, who not only speak the word but also realize it. They realize it by a revolt without fighting and without violence. So the Hora Est, which is spoken at this time, means the intense preparation and dynamizing of an entirely new possibility in our time. And the intention is, where possible, to make you two housemates of the Lord, fellow citizens of the new field of life, in the words of Ephesians 2. So regard this possibility as something very close to you. Here it does not concern a process executed by divine powers or heavenly entities. No, the possibilities are offered by heavenly, by original powers, but you must utilize them, you must realize them, you must employ the building materials. You must make yourself ready for this. You are called to be a housemate of the Gnosis. You are, as it were, admitted to a new house and can live in it, provided you help in its building. The extent to which you thereby become one with this new house is also made clear in Ephesians 2. As living building stones, you are brought to the foundations, the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the cornerstone.
Understand these words. A prophet in the service of the universal brotherhood will never employ the prophetic faculty unintelligently, driven, for instance, by emotions or enthusiasm, or under the urge of personal interests or of a humane disposition. No, he will only build, he may and can only build on the cornerstone of the magnetic field of Christ. In this power he may build, but only as far as it justifies the employment of the prophetic faculty. We are dealing here with a tremendous faculty, the extent of which is scarcely imaginable. It is of such a far-reaching nature and carries with it such a tremendous responsibility that it is necessary to discuss extensively the problems connected herewith.